In a few minutes, we will receive ashes, a little smudge representing mortality pressed onto our foreheads. Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return. It sounds somber. It is somber. And yet the scriptures appointed for today complicate our assumption that Lent must be grim and depressing. The theologian and baker, Kendall Vanderslice, great name for a baker, writes in her book, Bake and Pray, in the Orthodox Church, Lent begins not on a Wednesday, but on Clean Monday. And in Greece, Clean Monday is a public holiday. It's marked by picnics and kite flying. The season of fasting is welcomed with anticipation and with joy. And the limits of Lenten fasting, of self-limiting certain foods, have made way for elaborate tables. Olives and octopus and shrimp, mussels, halva, tera masalata. Her point is simple, and it's liberating. Fasting does not have to be a somber affair. Fasting can be welcomed with anticipation because it's an opportunity to draw nearer to God. And the limits of fasting, then, can become fertile soil for creativity. Now, the things that we do and the things that we give up during Lent are not a punishment. They're preparation. It's clearing space and loosening our grip so that our hands are free. We hear in Isaiah how he rebukes the people because they are fasting in a way that leaves injustice intact. They bow their heads like a bulrush, but they exploit their workers. They abstain from food, but not from cruelty. And God says, that is not the fast I choose. The fast God chooses produces healing, it produces community, it rebuilds ruins. My favorite episode of the podcast On Being with Krista Tippett was recorded in 2010. I know it's a while ago, it's an oldie, but it's a goodie. And it's titled Pursuing Happiness. And it features a conversation with four global religious leaders, the Dalai Lama, the late Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, who was the chief rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregations of the British Commonwealth for 22 years, Muslim scholar Sayyid Hossein Nasser, and the then presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, Catherine Jeffords Shorey. And why, you may be asking, is he bringing up a conversation about happiness on Ash Wednesday? Well, it's because Ash Wednesday can tempt us to think that holiness must be bleak. But those leaders who come from very different traditions kept circling back to the same deeper truth, that joy is not the enemy of sanctity. It is often the fruit of what is most holy. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks joked that Jewish history is not exactly famous for happiness. And yet, he said, we still get together and we celebrate. He then offers us a spiritual practice. He says that when something bad happens, we can learn to say, I will not let you go until you bless me. He connects it to Jacob wrestling with the angel, refusing to release even suffering until he has discovered the blessing hidden inside of it. It's a very Lenten way to live. Not pretending that suffering is good, and it's not glamorizing grief, but it's refusing to let pain have the last word. And in that same conversation, the Dalai Lama spoke about looking at tragedy from different angles. Despite all that he has been through, he insisted that even in loss, there may be opportunity. And Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey suggested that happiness is not merely a private right, but something that is bound up with the well-being of the whole community. And that may sound strange on a day when we are marked with ashes, but Lent is precisely this. It is refusing to let suffering have the final word, refusing to let ashes just be merely ashes, insisting that even here, especially here, there is a blessing to uncover. Isaiah promises us that if we practice the fast that God chooses, you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. That's not language of deprivation. That is language of abundance. Lenten discipline is not about shrinking life. It's about expanding it. Syed Hossein Nasser in that podcast spoke about the deep connection between beauty and goodness, that in Arabic, the same root word carries the meaning of beauty and virtue and goodness. Beauty, he said, draws us toward the divine. When we fast rightly, when we loosen injustice, share bread, and shelter the unhoused, we participate in that beauty. We become restorers of streets to live in. And that is beautiful work. Rabbi Sacks told one other story about a rabbi watching people frantically running through the town square. "Why are you running?" he asks. "To make a living," they say. And the rabbi replies, "How do you know the living is in front of you? Maybe it's behind you and you just need to stop and let it catch up." Lent is that stopping. Jesus tells us to go into our room and shut the door, to fast in secret, to give without trumpets. It is a slowing down that lets our blessings catch up with us. So, in a few minutes, when you come forward for ashes, do not receive them as a sign of despair. Receive them as soil. Because our human limitations, our hunger, our humility, our honesty about our own dustness can become fertile ground. The string that holds that kite in the air doesn't suffocate it. It gives it shape so that it can actually rise. And in the same way, holy limits can lift us. Ashes mark those limits. And limits, when we rightly embrace them, can become starting points for creativity and compassion and joy. This Lent, Isaiah says in effect, "Your light shall break forth like the dawn." That promise isn't for someone else. It's for us. It's for this parish. It's for this world. It's for your own weary hearts. And so this Lent, may we fast in a way that frees us. May we pray in a way that enlarges us. May we give in a way that beautifies the world. And when we wrestle and when we struggle, because we all know we will, may we say with Jacob and with Rabbi Sacks, "I will not let you go until you bless me."